PriceDC.com.
This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency might be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, I'm here with Carlos Solari, Vice President, Cyber Technologies at CSC. The reason I want to bring in Carlos is because he has been on both sides of the fence. He's been on your side of the fence. He's been a federal IT professional, and he's risen very quickly in that capacity. He's also on the other side of the fence. He works for a commercial company now. And so I think he has a good balance, a good understanding of some of these major security issues that everyone's thinking about, at least you should be thinking about it if you're a federal IT professional. So I thought I'd bring in Carlos. He has a kind of an interesting background, especially for many of my listeners who may be starting off their careers in the federal government. But before I blather on interminably, I'll have Carlos maybe introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your background and why you wound up at CSC.
Sure. It's a pleasure to be here, John. A little bit about my present job. I am working at CSC in the role that we've defined internally as our cyber strategy and our cyber high growth market segment, which really means that we recognize that there's a lot of attention being paid within both the public and the private sector on this topic, and it's becoming something that needs a lot of attention. The assets, the know-how, the expertise of the people at CSC with its history working in this area of cybersecurity is something that can be leveraged. And so we want to put together a team and methodologies that we can then offer to our customers around the world. A good many of those customers are resident here in the public sector. And so bringing all that together is what we call our cyber strategy in the cyber high growth market segment. And that's where I'm presently at and serving to be a major participant on our team. But a little bit about my background. I got here sort of a long path that started in Colombia, South America, where I was born. A very typical American immigrant story with that you hear so many people can tell this story only here, particularly in the United States. But grew up like any American kid and went to school here in Virginia at Washington and Lee University. Got a degree in biology, then went into the Army for 13 and a half years in the Signal Corps. From there, transitioned to the FBI and left there after 6.5 years, and I did get up fairly high in the executive ranks of the FBI. And when I tell my story about my FBI time, I tell it with respect to the amount of time that we spent working on the issues that were prevalent there in the mid-1990s that ultimately led to recognizing that IT is fundamental to the missions of these organizations. The notion that you can process information, intelligence information, shaped a lot of my thinking, and it gave me some of the perspectives of how real these IT systems are to the enablement of real physical world issues that we have to work with.
And I think that's what many of my listeners, I mean, you can tell what my listeners are. Typical federal IT professional, they're getting bombarded with mandates and programs, and they have to do this, and they have to move to the cloud, and they have to tap dance on one foot, and they're getting pushed in all kinds of directions. And maybe they're Googling this or coming up on Carlos Solari or trying to figure out how they can adapt, maybe take a better look at some of these issues. And I think what you've done at CSC is taken all these years of your, decades of your experience and, you know, put it in a big old pot and boiled it down to maybe 4 or 5 things that the listener should worry about. I mean, you can worry about 500. You can worry about 100. You're not going to remember 100. You might remember 4, and I guess that's what you folks are talking about. 4, kind of the biggies, huh?
Yes, it's really the compendium of pulling all these experiences together. So some of it is realizing that even though we talk about it in the virtual world, that ultimately it has physical impacts. And so you ground yourself in that most important understanding. The notion also that things are tied together, particularly when they get operational. And there's been a lot of talk, for example, recently about the need for public and private partnerships. That's mostly been talk. We need to translate that into real working exchange of capabilities at the speed that we call internet time, which is near real time, the speed at which the internet can operate. So these experiences allowed me to bring together a notion that we are now adopting within CSE that we call the security stack, which says that at its bottommost layer, systems and information need to be protected. We call that assured systems and assured content. That would be layer one, if you will, of the security stack. On top of that, we recognize that you do need security technologies like firewalls, intrusion detection, intrusion prevention to protect those systems, that content. And then there's a third layer, the one that we call the intelligence layer, where you need the abilities to establish situational awareness with respect to both the threats that are inside your network that you can generate information about from looking at the logs and the audit information from all the devices that are inside the network. But you complement that with the view of what's happening outside the network as well. There's a lot of indices that we can tap into that are commercially available that we can then collate that information together to create a situational awareness of what's happening with respect to the threat. That's the intelligence layer, our layer three. And then the layer four, which is the one that I started to speak about, which is the notion that you do need ultimately, particularly for companies that make up our critical infrastructure, companies like the A&D space, like the utilities, like the health system, as an example, you need the ability to exchange information between your public and your private sector. So you do need a layer four, which is the government systems, government response capabilities, and you need to connect that up together so that you can both inform your state of security and become aware quicker, faster, and be able to mitigate and respond and make the adjustments in your security defenses. Particularly important, again, if you're one of these companies that power the nation's power grid, that enable the water supply system to work, critical infrastructures that go beyond an understanding that it's just government systems that need to be protected. It's also the commercial systems when they become that important to us.
So if you've read one too many books on computer security and heard one too many podcasts, you can go to CSE.com. And I think there should be a white paper on this coming up in the next few months. Is that right?
That's right. We're writing a white paper that we'll publish. And it's really, again, to inform both the public and the private sector that we really need to think of the problem as requiring all four of these layers, and that there's also the need to integrate the four layers together so that ultimately you have a more comprehensive, sophisticated solution to what is a very complicated, difficult, challenging problem.
And changing all the time.
And changing all the time. So when we've talked in the past about advanced persistent threats, and it's a term, an acronym, APTs, that is starting to gain more awareness in this space, we recognize that this is the kind of threat that has evolved over time. It's not something that just came in around the corner overnight, but it's evolved over time. And it's the threat that companies, when we talk to them about have a real fear in their eyes with respect to what can an APT do with respect to stealing my information, intellectual property.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Carlos Solari, Vice President Cyber Technologies at CSC. Talked about cybersecurity, and before we went on break, we used the word fear. It's a four-letter word. We get to use a four-letter word on the air, fear. And I think fear is pretty healthy. I think if you are a federal IT professional and listening to the show, it's probably good to be a little bit fearful and wary. Nothing wrong with being afraid. Now, you have to have respect for your opponent, but your opponents are out there. I mean, they're out there, and they're trying to get in. And maybe a lock on the door may not be good enough. And we're talking about computer security. Now, when I think about security, I think about, oh, you know, VOIP, and I got this phone, I got this smartphone, and this person next to me has got an iPad, and what the heck's going on with this? And isn't that, I mean, the whole idea of all these things coming together is going to make it a lot easier and a lot easier for attack. So tell us a little about convergence and what your perspective is on this, the threat of convergence.
Okay, I'll start with one of my favorite words, convergence, because I really discovered it when I went to work for Alcatel-Lucent some 4.5 years ago. And the talk there was all about convergence, and learned quickly that it meant nothing really more than that everything that had in the past been organized around separate infrastructures for voice, video, and data was now converging, the word convergence, around the Internet Protocol IP. So telephony had its own different protocol, the video had its a separate. And so the notion that all this information can be converted to IP has tremendous benefits from collapsing infrastructures, simplifying infrastructures in some regards, and the ability to then connect information, voice, video, and data together like never before. At the same time, my job there was to look at, well, if we're going to do this, obviously there's going to be some risk associated with this, and it becomes quite obvious. We know what that risk is in the data side of the house because we've you know coined terms around it. Spam, delivering malware, is one type of threat that has existed in the data side with email delivery. Can we imagine that spam could also be something that manifests itself in simple telephony? Some computer generating this kind of information and bombarding your telephone or your television. The little example I like to use, imagine your dad or mom calling you up in the middle of the night saying that your television is on the blitz and you've called some 800 number and they've told you to reboot your television because the television's become a computer.
It shocks some people.
And it is quite shocking. So that understanding as to what is the not only the convergence for the benefit, but the convergence of threats using this common protocol IP is what this word also means. And we've had to actually study it and understand the manifestations of what convergence can mean from a risk perspective. And that risk is high. And so when we talk about fear, what can that mean? So much of it is in the abstract and in theory. But when you talk to real customers who have lost data, whose systems have been compromised, it becomes real at that point in time. And that fear, you can see it in the eyes.
You know, last week, Microsoft had their big conference in town, their worldwide partner conference. 15,000 application developers were walking the streets of Washington, D.C., lost and hot. Brings up the question of open source versus proprietary. And I'm sure if you're sitting at a cocktail party with someone, they hear about your background, they're going to say, hey, Carlos, come here, buddy. Well, what is it? I mean, is open source safer than proprietary? Or what's the best way to go? And there's no answer. And I think many of my listeners may be hit at cocktail parties with that question. Maybe you can give them some insight on how to come to terms with that, because it's not a black and white answer, I don't think.
No, it's not all black and white. But I am a big advocate for open source, primarily for the reason that we've seen both on both sides of it, the transparency that you get by the participation of anyone really to look at code and to evaluate it, practice, the art of exchanging information and critiquing information in an open forum, is just vitally important because we see the opposite, which is when code is held very tightly, and then all of a sudden you have to go patch that code because it hasn't had that kind of transparency. And you don't have to patch it just once, but multiple times. So the notion that you create transparency in open source code and can see these things, these vulnerabilities, have people who critique it, identify them early, and they get corrected, I think is what the main benefit of open source development is about.
Well, Carlos, I'm going to go back in time to the beginning of our conversation where you were just a kid from Virginia. You went to school, kind of, you know, wound up in the Army and progressed, moved to the FBI. For our younger listeners, and there are some younger listeners out there, maybe want to make a career out of the federal government, what kind of guidelines or suggestions, give them two or three things that you think they should maybe focus in on and maybe you can say, well, the reason I'm successful or I was successful because I did one, two, and three, maybe you could share some of those quick one, two, three for our listeners so
sure.
They can have the magic sauce.
Okay, John. And just to capstone it a little bit, a few years after I left the FBI, I did end up working as a CIO for the White House, and what a job that was. What a tremendous opportunity. And so I do get a chance to speak to people about this question, and I speak often about what I learned in the Army, which is a mission orientation to everything that I do. In fact, I begin with whenever I engage a new position, I tell people I'm here for a two-year period. Because I associate myself with an outcome at the end of 2 years, achieving some important mission. And I work as if at the end of 2 years, I'm no longer going to be employed and I have to re-justify myself. So thinking that way is something that you learn. It becomes part of your DNA in the military, mission orientation. And so I encourage people to think that way. And the other encouragement, I tell a little story around Having graduated with a master's degree from the Naval Postgraduate School as a very sophisticated engineer, and one of my first assignments landing in Washington, D.C. was to be the picnic officer for the what used to be called the Defense Communications Agency.
It was like a Harvard PhD, answering the phone.
The picnic officer. And I went home disappointed, obviously, but through the night, convinced myself that we were going to have the best darn picnic you could possibly have
in
history.
Right.
What I didn't know is that they had actually asked me to manage and put this picnic together because past picnics, they had run out of beer. They had, had been rained upon, had given, wrong directions to the site.
And note to staff, don't run out of beer. Huh?
Don't run out of beer at a picnic. So we came together and really did have a magnificent picnic. And as a result, one of the colonels who was there noticed that the organization that had taken place and came by afterwards and said, listen, I'm looking for a deputy project manager on this big project, $12 million project that I'm going to be engaged in. And I saw the organization, it was evident right here, and would you like to join me? And so I tell my picnic story that way.
You can manage the pennies, you can manage the dollars or the hundreds of dollars.
Clearly, and so that became a lifelong friendship. We had a very successful project, and so that's another point of the message that I communicate is that dedication to mission, and then also take every single job as if it's the one that's going to make your career.
You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Carlos Solari in the studio. He's the Vice President for Cyber Technologies at CSC. If you heard the first part of this interview, you remember that Carlos came here at age six, didn't speak English, just a regular guy, goes to school, gets a degree, joins the Army, and he has a lot of success, joins the FBI, has a lot of success, and all of a sudden he's the CIO at the Executive Office of the White House. Rags to riches. He goes from poor immigrant kid all the way up to the White House. And I think a lot of our listeners want to hear some good stories. Give us some good juicy stories about the White House, Carlos.
Okay. And some I can't tell, obviously. But
you don't want to get arrested on the way home.
Yeah, that's true. There are a lot of interesting stories. And when I do speak to them, I speak from the perspective of not revealing things, but in things that we learn from. And so we now know of something called botnets. When at the time that I was there, saw what that actually feels like and looks like when your bandwidth connectivity gets saturated. But the main message and the main question that I got, the main lesson that I learned from that time that I spent there is that we really need to re-architect how we think about security. You've had Alan on this show before talk about the need to design security in at the beginning, starting with the software code. That lesson needs to be put into real practice across the industry, and the federal government has a role to play there. I think that was one of the key lessons that I drew from there, because no amount of money of the layer two security of the firewalls can ultimately protect what is vulnerable systems that have never been designed with that kind of thinking in mind. So that's one of the key lessons that I drew from there. The other one, again, is that this is not theory. This is not something that is just in the abstract. This is real, and the impact can be significant. And taking it seriously and recognizing that this is all about in some cases, the existence of whether a company stays in business or not. Is why we need to take this topic of cybersecurity so seriously.
So what CSC has done is they've grabbed you and they said, okay, Carlos, let's leverage your experience and try to help the federal government improve. And so that's what CSC is all about right now.
Truly. So the experiences that, again, I've been able to bring to the task have allowed me to put structure behind our efforts. So when I arrived, one of the criticisms I have had of ourselves was it feels too much like it's a list of things. We need to actually put it together into a story, a model, and a structure that allows us to focus our efforts, but also to communicate to our customers why we're different. And I believe we're getting there with the differentiation around understanding that it is the inner workings of these four layers together. That give us the kind of rigor and security that are needed for the companies that we serve. Some are Fortune 500, strictly commercial. Some have more of an association with critical infrastructure, and some are our own U.S. government agencies that rely on us to do these things correctly and to understand how to do them right.
I think everyone in the world has beat the topic of social networking to death. I think social networking is maybe a symptom, and the problem may be this whole concept of baked-in security. If you have the security baked in the beginning, who cares what kind of mobile device you have? I mean, it can be any kind of flavor, any kind of operating system, but if it's in an infrastructure that's secure, then you can at least control some of that security.
Yes. In fact, when I've spoken to other CIOs, I've said the two things. One, we haven't talked about cloud computing, but also the social networking sites. And if you think that you can just, put a border around your network and not take advantage of these kinds of systems, then you're going to be a short-lived CIO. So embrace it. But we also at the same time have to embrace the principles that the security does have to be designed in. And you should levy that requirement on the providers and of the service and the providers of the technology, and force them through your requisition process, air acquisition process, to ensure that they actually have done it in a structured, standardized way. I believe that ultimately, if the buying side of this equation between the buyers and the sellers establishes standards-based demands for security, then we will start to force the supply chain that delivers these technologies to behave in a way that says, my customers feel that it's important, then we're going to take the necessary steps to apply the kind of security that is needed.
I've interviewed many people about different aspects of the federal government, and another topic that's beat to death is cloud. But what's not beaten to death is well, let's come up with some standards. I mean, once we can all agree on certain standards, then we can move forward. But it's almost a battle.
It is a battle, and it's not that we don't have standards. We've got plenty of them. The old adage that the problem with standards is there's so many to pick from becomes part of the challenge. But let's pick one. I think the U.S. federal government has done a wonderful job, particularly lately, with enhancing FISMA and enhancing the NIST standards to make them have more teeth. And to recognize that it's not something that you do, once a year as an audit, but you do continuously, and that you need to exchange information to alert around vulnerabilities or misconfigurations in real time, that it's not good enough to just visit once in a while these systems. And those are the kinds of directions that are starting to take shape that I see a promising future for a recognition that security is not some mystical thing that we can't resolve, but it's really engineering principles that need to get applied. And if we apply them, we'll get to a better equilibrium than the one that we have now.
Constant attack means constant vigilance. I think that's a lesson we learned from the whole evolution of FISMA. We're going to have to take a quick break. We'll have you back in a few months and learn more, because it's always going to change here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we had Carlos Solari in the studio. He's the Vice President of Cyber Technologies at CSC. For more information in the white paper, you can go to csc.com. Thank you very much, Carlos.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Solutions Developers Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. WFED, your source for federal news now.
Would you look at this bill?
Tired of paying way too much to your alarm company and not getting real security service? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has more than 40 years of industry-leading experience and was recently named Dealer of the Year out of over 30,000 companies. Ackerman has its own UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Put simply, with Ackerman Security Systems, you you get the most qualified professionals in the industry monitoring your home for just $18.95 a month. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. So whether you want a new system or want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Federal employees call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or